Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, July 15th. This is the 71st episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guests are the amazing team behind Heritage Radio Network, and I can't wait to talk with them. But first, as I do on every show, I'm going to start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to practice teamwork. Work with others to achieve common goals. Think of the group before yourself. Being a part of the team not only drives motivation, but it creates community and support. By joining forces and working together, we can achieve greatness. So be a team player. And remember, there's no I in team. That's my tip today. Okay, now this is super cool. I can't believe my guests are here. After 70 episodes, I am finally having the team behind Heritage Radio Network on my show. They are Aaron Fairbanks, Executive Director and host of The Farm Report. Jack Inslee, Executive Producer and host of Full Service Radio and my engineer every week. And Allison Hamlin, Deputy Director. Now, Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit, member-supported food radio station broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. And let's hear about it. This is totally behind the scenes with Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here.
I need to clarify, I'm not engineering this week of All in the Industry.
True.
Thank Liz, you, Liz.
Liz fills in, and she's fabulous. But regularly you do,
yes.
And you've listened to almost all of my shows.
Almost all of them.
So, and now this is the first time I'm letting you speak.
Well, thank you.
No, I am
great,
like,
to be here.
Well, it's great having you and Allison too.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. So, I like to start out with people's backgrounds and find out how you got here. And I think all of your backgrounds are very different. So, Jack, do you want to start out?
Sure. I will give the short version of this story. I'll try. I always grew up producing music and recording. So from the time I was 13, I kind of built a home recording studio for myself. And I would record all the local artists in the neighborhood, mostly hip-hop music, some other stuff. After years of doing that, putting out albums kind of independently, I went to NYU for music technology, which I suppose is not so far away from what I'm doing now here. And then out of college, I was working on short film sound and post-production sound. And one day, Patrick called my good friend and roommate, Nat, with this idea to start Heritage Radio Network. And Nat was working at WNYU, the radio station at NYU, which is how Patrick got connected to him. And I guess Patrick did his graduate studies at NYU, I believe. So when it was time, when he was kind of bubbling with this idea, he thought, like, let's ask NYU for maybe some radio people that can come help make this thing real. And Nat immediately asked me, he's like, you know, do you want to help me with this project? It's going to be a food radio station. So early on, I kind of came on helping Nat in the initial build-out phases, and the rest is history.
Wow. So this is like 2009.
That was 2009, okay. Yeah.
So you're a part of the beginning.
The first phase.
And then, Aaron, you came in a little later, so tell me what brought you to Heritage Radio Network.
I started working with Patrick in 2005 when I first moved to New York City. I came here wanting to be a cook. I wanted to work in a restaurant kitchen, and Patrick had started Heritage Foods USA right around that time with my current boss at the time, Todd Wickstrom from Zingerman's Deli.
And yay, they were like, Zingerman's, yeah. Ann Arbor.
That was definitely like the impetus for like my love of food started at Zingerman's. But I always wanted to live in New York. Seemed like a thing to do. And Patrick and Todd very generously offered me a part-time position helping them with deliveries. So I would meet Patrick down on Flatbush and Myrtle Avenue here in Brooklyn, and we'd drive around to all these restaurants in this unrefrigerated, rented U-Haul, delivering amazing cuts of heritage breed pork to, you know, Del Posto as it was opening, and Union Square Cafe. And Patrick was always talking about this idea he had for the radio. And I'm like, this guy's crazy. you know, I was like fresh off the boat from the Midwest. And so he had what to me seemed like a lot of ideas and a very like New York persona. And I was like, okay, well, call me when that happened. And a few years later, I was working on a farm in upstate New York. And I got a call. Hey, do you want to come on as a guest for this radio show, The Farm Report, on the Heritage Radio Network? And I was like, oh, I guess he did it. So I first came to the network as a guest, and then when I returned to the city to pursue my graduate education, he's like, come co-host. So I came in through the hosting scene, but was a guest first and foremost.
Wow, that's great. Good to know. And then you became executive director in 2012.
Yeah, June of 2012, I had been working part-time for Heritage Foods while I was in graduate school, doing some different projects for them. And Patrick took me out for dinner, and he's like, oh, the radio, you know, we just got nonprofit status. It's starting to grow. There's, you know, getting attention. And he really painted this, like, picture of, you know, amazing potential, and then looked at me and said, hey, do you want to come and run it? And I was completely blindsided and kind of, I was just like, yeah, let me think about it. I don't even really know what that means or what you're asking. But it seemed really fun. It seemed like a great way to bring my kind of disparate work experience to bear, having spent time on farms and in kitchens and looking at, you know, urban policy analysis and business management through graduate school. Could get to do all of those great things. And then there was this whole landscape of stuff that I didn't know how to do at all. So it's been a really fun couple of years, definitely a big learning curve for me. And great to have like Jack by my side the whole time and Patrick as well, you know, definitely a team situation. And then of course, all the hosts who are really just great, like touchstones throughout the network's history, but also experts in their own right to really drive the station forward.
Excellent. Thanks.
Yeah.
Now, Allison, you joined last year.
I did, yeah, in April.
And what brought you here? I know you were at Astor Center.
I was, yeah. So I moved to New York in 2011 to go to grad school. And when I moved, I was looking for a job that wasn't in a restaurant. I had a lot of restaurant experience and was ready to maybe diversify that a little bit. But I was still looking for something in food. And so I ended up kind of like stumbling into this really incredible job at Astor Center, you know, and eventually ended up running a lot of their hands-on culinary education programs and their wine and spirits pairing program, which was an amazing experience to kind of learn the ropes. You know, it's like not every job that lets you sit in on the like best and brightest minds, like teaching people how to cook and drink and like have a great time and get paid for it. It felt like strange and in fact felt so good that I dropped out of grad school to do that, you know, to like really throw myself into that space. And it was there that I met Erin for the No Go Left Behind project. And she, you know, it was like the first time I had really heard of Heritage Radio Network. And she came in with some chefs and like, you know, they delivered us a whole goat. And I remember looking at this goat in our walk-in and being like, who are these people? Like, what is going on? But, you know, it was really great. It was really great to meet the team. And there was so much overlap with kind of my network. And when I heard they were looking for somebody to take this position, I really jumped at the opportunity. And it's kind of history from there. I feel like it's kind of a great group that combines all sorts of really, like, enjoyable aspects of that kind of clientele-facing education with some real, you know, with that that goes beyond the limits of what you're able to do in a classroom or to do in person. And I think the really true impact that you can have is that it's so accessible and it's so free and fair, and that we're able to do stuff from this tiny little bunker in Bushwick that can be heard around the world is a pretty incredible thing to be able to do.
I agree. Yes, and it's not kind of a great group. It totally is a great group.
Sorry. Let me revise that. They're the most amazing group you could have ever possibly asked for. So let's be clear about that.
It is. Now, a lot of people have heard, or my listeners might know, you know, they listen to Heritage Radio. They listen to a bunch of shows. But people might not understand, like, how does this work? Like, here we are in the back of Roberta's, and there are 35-plus shows. And what are your roles? Like, how do you make this happen?
That's a great question. It's funny. We actually had a meeting about 2 months ago where we sat down, and we had identified kind of, I think, six different areas where our work as a team and as a network kind of laid out, and then we ranked ourselves, each of us, 1 to 6. We're like, I spend the most time here, second most here, and then we all ranked each other, because I thought it would be interesting to see kind of what we all thought, and it matched up pretty well. I would say, like, I definitely oversee the organization, so I have my hands a little bit in every pot. Mm-hmm. And looking really at the long-term vision and laying out short-term strategy, and then really looking pretty heavily to these guys for a myriad of things in, like, daily operations, but also kind of thought leadership. And I would say, Jack...
I live in content.
Yeah. Okay.
The creative, if you will.
Yeah. That's...
And the voice.
That's also true, yeah.
You have the best radio voice. I mean...
Thank you.
I mean, mine is pretty darn amazing,
damn good. I've had a lot of practice over the years here. Actually, my first job, I forgot to say, when I was 14, was at an AM radio station. It was called Student Radio 1440 AM. And I was like the host that would give away bowling tickets on AM radio to, like, nobody, you know. So
that's where it began.
That's where my mic
just
practice
some
started.
Promo ideas for later. I think too, Jack really is being a little modest. He also heads up, like, our entire music program. So that's also one of the things that listeners will notice when they tune in. They're not hearing kind of Beatles and Rolling Stones covers.
Yes.
Yes.
For two reasons. A, we can't afford that. And B, it's more fun to spotlight the independent and the local and kind of, like, build a community of musicians around this. You know, one of the big things we want to do here is, you know, reach everybody in their own communities, because everybody eats. So foodies obviously are aware of us. They know about a lot of the things we talk about, but we want to expand into other communities. And I think that's been a really nice kind of harmonious partnership here with the musicians we bring into the studio, and we feature them on the food shows. They can learn something about food. Food people can learn about new musicians.
Yeah, well, I was listening to your show, and it's full service radio, and it's a large part music, and then also a food interview.
Yes.
I actually just caught the one with Ducky.
Oh, okay.
That was the last one I listened to.
All right.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it. And it's nice that you do. All of our programs here are so different, and it's your show is very different than mine, but yet it still ties under the same umbrella of entertainment and food radio and education. And,
oh, yeah. They don't get out of here without being asked at least 3-4 questions on food. And you can always tell who's listened to full service radio and who hasn't. Because if they're totally surprised by the food questions, I'm like, oh, you said you listened to this show before.
But you didn't.
I think you didn't.
That's the thing. Food is, like, basically this, like, secret weapon to talk about everything from race and gender politics to world history to environmental activism to pop culture. You know, I think we get obviously a little geekier here than maybe most people, but we really, I feel like... the station kind of looks at the world through the lens of food, and it lends itself, like, very well to exploring all different kinds of topics.
Yes, absolutely. And Allison, What would you, what on that list of the six things, how you defined it, what was the top of yours?
So I basically run all of our communication. So if you've ever gotten an email from us, chances are good I wrote it. The one of the interesting and kind of fun things about being on such a small team is that you have your hands in a lot of different pots. So I'm also our designer, which is interesting because if you asked me 10 years ago what I thought I would be doing, design was so far from that list, like I don't think I had even conceived of it. So those are kind of, those are my major thrusts, but I also run our fundraising arm, and
these are all major things.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about a traditional career and you're like, I'm going to focus on this thing, you would be totally ill-prepared to do any of our jobs. But I think being a generalist, so I'm a big Harvard Business Review reader because I'm a huge nerd. And one of their articles like explains that the modern day worker is now a T-shaped enterprise. So you want to be a generalist on many things on the surface and then a specialist in one field. So I consider myself kind of like a business and nonprofit generalist with a very specific cross beam of food knowledge. So that's me as a T.
Well put.
Yeah. Like it.
I would say, too, it's, like, nice that I think there's a lot of, like, complementary skill sets. So if, like, you could make a yin-yang into, like, a three-part machine somehow.
It's a peace sign.
Yeah, it's a peace sign. Like, I do feel like that's something that, like, helps us function really well is we come from different parts of the country, from different backgrounds. We have different kind of interests outside of the radio and the food world. But then really, like, different specific kind of skill set. So I feel like I'm constantly so grateful that Allison really likes to do a lot of things that I don't really like to do. And Jack likes to do a lot of things that aren't my favorite to do, and vice versa. So I think there's like a real kind of exchange of resources happening that lets us, you know, as three people probably accomplish more Then obviously we could individually, but I feel like it magnifies our ability to have an impact and run a really like tight ship. And then of course there's like Liz in the studio, and then G and our intern team. So there's a lot of people who are making things operate in a lot of different ways. And then of course all of our amazing hosts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're too very blessed with a really diverse network. So not only is it a host, but I feel like we have such a great crew of people who just like us and generally are willing to offer us advice on so many things that I mean, despite all of our like pool talent, you know, it's always nice to have someone be like, hey, I'm going to help you write some headlines and like show you how to do that. Or like, let's get the word out about your Kickstarter, or you know,
or PR advice with Sherry.
I know
we have definitely looked to you for.
We really do. So thank you for being there.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, I love being a part of this network and this team and having a show. And I didn't ever expect to be a radio host. I didn't expect to be a publicist. But the fact that I can help out, or you know, it's my pleasure. It is teamwork, right?
Yeah, and the last thing I want to throw in here with the strength of the team and kind of the way we do things here, I think what sets us apart is we do stuff. You know, I think a lot of people, really, it's that simple.
That's
that
a professional
simple.
Term.
So many people, I feel like, especially in this world of emerging media, will have meetings and they'll workshop and they'll think, like, well, what's the perfect video? Or, like, how can we edit it? We go with stuff and we learn from there. And I think that's been the ethos of the station from the beginning when Patrick had this bold idea. And it wasn't like, let's have a year's worth of meetings. It's like, no, let's get the website up. Let's record. Press record right now. And then let's see where we grow from there.
Yeah,
equal parts scary and inspiring.
Yeah, it's like great. The true mantra of the perfect is the enemy of the good. And that just does not fly here, which is sometimes terrifying, but often really thrilling and energizing, I think, to our work.
Terrific. We're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back, talk more with the Heritage Radio Network team. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Heritage Radio Network's Executive Director Aaron Fairbanks, Executive Producer Jack Inslee, and Deputy Director Allison Hamlin, who might have a little bit of a raspy voice today. We were just talking about it on the break.
Well, yeah, no, we were just saying it's like you guys probably, because you can't see me, think I'm some kind of like chain smoking, like, I woke up with this and I don't know what it is, but I also feel like I might be going through like this must be like going through puberty.
Right.
For dudes. I don't know. I never had that experience, but I have to say from like 6 hours of it, I'm sick of it. And I'm so sorry, Jack, that this was like possibly a phase in your life. It's fun.
No, I always had this voice.
Oh, you woke up like this. That's right. That's cool.
I do think the raspy, sexy voice. It's cool. It's on my show. It's great.
Hey, quick shout out to the music we heard on that break. That is RecTech, who is Nat, who is the first person who came in and built out the studio. Well, the technical, you know, musical, the studio equipment. He's the brains behind all that.
So, wonderful.
Yes.
Let's talk about the programming here on Heritage Radio a little bit, because how do you go about selecting the hosts and the different lineup? And it's a diverse list, and some people have been with the network since the beginning and some are new. So,
yeah, well, I think Jack can really speak to the beginning.
Oh, it was a clubhouse. It was like, I can't even speak to the things that happened in this room in the beginning. But really, it was a clubhouse. It was raw. It was friends. It was people that were game and willing, like I just said before, try, go, you know. And I always say, like, when Aaron came on is when it became an organization. It was like, okay, pre-Aaron, everything is happening off of, like, my Gmail, maybe, and Patrick's, like, network of friends. And then as Aaron came on, I think some real good criteria started being implemented as to, like, well, what are we going to take on? What kind of content do we want to be doing? What aren't we doing?
Yeah, as you kind of, like, search for identity. I mean, I think really nuts and bolts, It's folks who are passion driven. Everyone has a million ideas, but it's like the person like yourself who's going to come in. You know, we're a primarily volunteer led host organization. So some of our hosts are bringing in a little bit of revenue from sponsorships, but most people are here because they really have something to say. When we think about what we're looking for in programming, it kind of happens in two and a half primary ways. One, usually I have a working wish list. I'm like, man, these are things that we're really seeing as kind of gaps in our programming lineup. These are kind of up and coming issues in food. These are voices that we're not hearing from anywhere else in the mainstream media. And we want to make sure that we're kind of like actively putting ourselves as a network in front of those spaces. So we're like, how do we kind of target different areas? And a lot of that is just kind of being out there and having conversations. And the other half is people come to us. They come on as a guest of another show. They listen to a podcast. They come on as a fan or through a friend of a friend. And they're like, hey, I have this idea and I want to move it forward. And that process is like pretty nuts and bolts. I mean, it starts with a conversation or two as we kind of like try and whittle down someone's idea to make sure, like, oh, is there a show here or is this an episode or what is really the thing? And we do a written proposal and people come on and record a pilot. And we bring the pilot back to the team, and we do a lot of workshopping. We have a very heavy hand at the beginning of bringing a show on, because that's the time when people need the most support. And we feel like we can share what we've learned listening to thousands of episodes and launching a number of shows. kind of what we've seen that works or doesn't work. But then after that, it really is like each host really produces their own show on a weekly basis. So when we're looking at things today in the food media landscape of, 2015, it's like we don't want to be redundant to content you can find somewhere else. Eater does a great job of like kind of the restaurant kind of news pop culture space. We touch on that a little bit, but that's not really the space we're trying to own. We want to make sure that we're creating a space for people who are exploring the kind of outer fringes, the folks at the margins, the folks who are coming into the conversation. Like, those are the people that we're most interested in hearing perspectives and voices that you haven't heard before, which is, I think, why Jack Show ends up being really cool, because all of a sudden you're talking to some kind of underground electronic musician about food, and they're like, oh, food, man, I never really like thought about it. I didn't even know it was like a thing. And other folks are like, I've been thinking about it all day. This is my ideal meal. So we're not trying to be a network for foodies, because everybody eats. What we are trying to do is kind of show you different ways to kind of think about what that means and what impact it has.
Yeah, and your show, The Farm Report, I was looking at your numbers. You're up to like 270-something, or I was...
Yeah. I had a head start. But like I said, I actually came to The Farm Report first as a guest. So that was one of the original shows on the network. Jack actually took a turn.
Yeah, little known fact, I was a co-host of The Farm Report for like 12 episodes.
Those were funny, though. Those are some funny episodes.
I have to go back and find them.
Yeah, shout out to Heather Hyman, who held that show down from its inception in 2009.
I want to say the first 56 episodes.
At least, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Farm Report was, I think, the second show ever on the network. It was it was called the Patrick Martin's News Hour, which has become the main course, and then there was The Farm Report. Those were like the two pillars in the beginning.
Yeah, it was great. I was just listening to the one on blueberries.
Right. Happy 100th anniversary, Blueberry.
it's what's amazing with the lineup that I just, as someone who loves learning about food and the restaurant world or anything happening, is there's something in it for whatever your interest is. You can find the content. If someone wants to know about blueberries, it's there. If someone wants to know a little more about designing a restaurant, they maybe could listen to my show. Or there's just a diversity. So yeah. It's a good mix.
It's a good mix, and it also, like, I think the goal of the station's content is to be action oriented. So you think about people sitting at home watching the Food Network, and there's like, I think, 3 full TV channels dedicated to cooking. And guess what? Nobody in America is doing right now is cooking. So you kind of have to kind of step back and, be like, well, what is the point of that? And we ask ourselves that a lot with our content. What's the point? Like, what type of action is this going to inspire? And I think our hosts do a really nice job of like keeping things super grounded, because they're all practitioners. They're not kind of reporters giving you info on a scene. They're like actually there, living it, doing it, kind of being part of that conversation. So their perspective is really different, and their outcome goals are really different too.
True. Now, Allison, what's happening with the relaunch of the website? Because I know you're working on that.
That is an amazingly exciting frontier for us. I think we just held a Kickstarter, which finished in May, and the purpose was to fund an entire new website rebuild. So if you're on our website now in July of 2015, come back and check it out in September, because we're going to have a totally new website. Everything from an updated interface that's going to make you, as you're using it, direct you to better content, things that you might be interested in based on what you're listening to now. Everything from that to, we're really excited to be launching some kind of blog type features that will accompany radio in a way that we were really inspired to see on the Serial website. So if you're a big fan and you want to see more, perhaps a website for a restaurant that you, Sherry Bayer, are consulting on, there's now a space for you to explore that a little more on our site, which I think will really amp up that experience for you as a user. You know, and we are really, really fortunate to be working with the team at CMYK, which is a boutique design agency in Gowanus, and they have been nothing but supportive to us in the process. I think, you know, between the three of us, we have a lot of ideas, and kind of funneling them into a, like a tangible product has been a pretty interesting ride, I would say. But we're getting close to the point where we're ready to unveil it. And
yeah, I think just big focus on user experience. Like, we want you to hit the site as a listener, as a user, and very quickly to find exactly what you're looking for, assuming you know what you're looking for. And if you don't know what you're looking for, we want to kind of like bring you in and give you like a nice warm hand-holding guide towards the content that's going to be most relevant to you. So it's a really, the idea is to be a space for discovery and exploration, but also a really functional tool to get to what you need fast and easy and in a really clear way.
Jack's putting together some really good audio stuff.
Yes, many surprises to come on the website. I think one of the major things is in thinking about how we're promoting some of these shows on social media, a lot of people spend most of their time on a feed, myself included. Somebody just asked me, like, what website do you go to every day? And I'm like, God, it's just the social media, really. And I get all my news from there. So when you're on a social media feed, it's kind of hard to click something and listen if it's a one-hour show. You don't have that hour. You have maybe a minute. You know this. We were just talking about short reads versus long reads.
Yeah, I'm into the shorter ones.
So the idea here is when we launch and moving forward, we want to be promoting a lot more of these one-minute teaser clips that will give you a nice chunk of information, something you could like repeat at a dinner party, a good fact to learn, and hopefully leave you hungry for more. So we're in the process right now of kind of combing through the archives and building a database of these one-minute teasers that will kind of give people an entry point into the larger conversations.
Awesome. So I'm really excited about
it's really
the new website.
It's really a pre-new website and post-new website world. Like, you know, for people listening in the future,
get ready.
The past was a dark place.
Okay, before we take a break, let me ask you guys the question I have from my guest last week. I had on Open Table's Lila Srinivasan. She's the Vice President of Marketing at Open Table, and Olivia Terenzio, the Content Marketing Manager at Open Table. So they want to know, they have a, if we at Open Table could feature any article about the restaurant business on Open for Business, which is their blog, what would you like to see? And they noted that they're big fans of Heritage Radio Network.
Ooh, I like
Who wants to go first?
I will, just because actually we have been working on one of our evolutionary episodes featuring Mimi Sheraton. So I've been listening to that a lot, and it's been really neat to get her take on what it was like to be a reviewer for the New York Times. And one of the things she talks about is how it'd be challenging to do that job now and what her criteria was for a restaurant. And she talks a lot about being able to kind of see your menu and see your food, which got me thinking a lot about the role that like lighting plays and can play in your restaurant. I was out at Four Horsemen last night, and I kept trying to figure out, like, which is a new restaurant here in Brooklyn, like, what is it about this space that is making me feel so good and like so warm? And I think the design aesthetic there is like so interesting, but I would love for someone to talk a little bit about light, because it has this design and this vibe, but it also has a really practical function. And it's one of those kind of details that, like, you know it feels better, but you're not exactly sure, like, why.
We just did a clip on this with a restaurant designer whose name is escaping me, unfortunately, but he made a great point. He said, if you dim the lights in a room, people start whispering. And it's like,
interesting.
Come a
if
little
nothing,
closer.
Right. And you do really control somebody's experience based on the lighting. It's a good point.
Great.
Oh, well,
anyone else?
I would jump in here. One of our previous reporters, interns, and hosts, Talia Ralph, for her master's thesis project at the NYU Food Studies program, proposed a series of articles based on looking at restaurant workers who are not chefs and profiling them. And I think
that's
a really interesting space that I have not seen much work in the editorial kind of calendar of a lot of these business-oriented blogs. So not only like thinking about people, you know, who are leading kitchens, but thinking about the staff on the floor, thinking about the business end of things, thinking about people in the middle who are not necessarily represented or glorified, and thinking about the work that they do and how important that is, and the lessons we can learn from them, because ultimately, you know, those people may move up into a leadership position, but they may also be the reason your dining experience is incredible. It's not just the person who, you know, whose name is on the front of that restaurant that is gonna turn your day from being, you know, fine to amazing and overwhelmingly good. So I'd like to see more of their stories in Open Table.
Which is super close to what my answer was going to be, like dovetailing there with wages. I think I'd like to see more writing on that, on some of these workers who end up being off the books and working overtime, and all of the considerations that go into that on both sides of those arguments. I think it's a conversation that I'm starting to see more of and would like to see continue. And the Great. Tipping versus non-tipping question that often ask.
Well, that's coming up. That's a good segue. We're going to take one break here, come back, and we are going to play my speedrun game and talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. We're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests are Heritage Radio Network's Aaron Fairbanks, Jack Inslee, and Allison Hamlin. And it's time for my speed round game.
So excited.
I'm excited too. Okay, so how this goes, I name two things. You pick your preference. There's no right or wrong. So here we go. Eat in or eat out?
In. Jack is just
how many
struggling.
Episodes and I'm struggling.
I
so
know, Jack.
Eat out,
on.
Eat
You've
out, eat out.
Every
Let's be
week
real.
For
Let's
a
be
year
real.
And a half.
Eat out, eat out, eat out.
If I'm alone, eat. Oh, you know what? Eat in, eat in.
Okay,
I'm gonna do it. Say it.
You guys are missing out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Cocktail.
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 Yay! Cocktails. Okay. Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
A la carte.
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Large plates. Big family style platters.
Small plates. I can never decide. I want them all.
Yeah.
Love it. Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Communal table.
Communal table.
All right. Here it is. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I've flip-flopped so many times on this, but in a perfect world, it's all-inclusive charge, and everybody's happy, and yeah, that's my answer.
I mean, having worked in the industry a bunch, I feel like it's tipping on top of the all-inclusive.
Right. It's both. It is.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I like all-inclusive, but I would also like the option to leave them more money if I could.
Well, no one will ever turn it down. Well, you never know.
Okay, here are a few special ones.
Yes.
Listening live or downloading podcasts?
I download.
Yeah, but listening live holds a very special place in my heart. I do love the ability to just hear it as it happens and send a tweet if I want and chime in, call in.
Right,
so I'm
going to
go with listen
for
live.
Sure.
Okay. Zingerman's or Katz's?
What? The Zingerman's? Come on!
Zingerman's, after having edited Ari and Ari's life story, amazing. And I've never even eaten there, but I can say Zingerman's.
Okay.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever been to Katz's. That's so horrible.
And I definitely haven't been to Zingerman, okay. So I'm not even sure I'm qualified to answer this question.
Okay. Skip that one for you.
Hold. Life goals.
I know, right?
A couple more. This one's mostly for Jack. Coachella or Bonnaroo?
Bonnaroo.
Oh.
Yeah. With all due respect to the folks at Coachella who do a really great job, I think Bonnaroo, the experience of that festival is unparalleled in the U.S. Mostly because all these other festivals are in large cities where people can commute. If you're in L.A. or Palm Springs, you're like, I'll pop into Coachella, see what's happening, but I'm going to go to an after party somewhere else. Bonnaroo is in the middle of Tennessee. There is nothing else to do. You're there. So once you're there, you're there. And I think it just creates a completely different atmosphere.
Okay.
Sold.
Done.
Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Cheese plate. That's not a question.
A dessert for me.
Oh, check it out.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
What? Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Jack's like, my telephone code is 212, so I gotta represent Manhattan.
I have to say Manhattan.
What?
I do. I really do. Just based
what?
On the history.
I don't even know
and
you right now.
The variety, the history. Yeah.
Yeah, for the same reason Brooklyn.
What?
Yeah, I know. Who am I, right?
Who am I? Jack, wow.
Shout out to Two Boots.
I heard that. How about industry news? We're going to run over time here a little bit, but this is good stuff. So let's talk about this article in the New York Times. New York City requires restaurants to freeze raw fish before serving. This is by Noah Remnick. So this has been big news this week, how there's new regulations being passed by the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, saying that fish served raw, undercooked, or marinated raw in dishes like ceviche must be first frozen, and this is going to take effect in August. I don't know. Some media people reached out to me this week too that they're following up and they're going to be writing about it. So what's your take on this?
I mean, I feel like when I read this, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be huge, and how are they going to regulate it and keep track of it? And I feel like it really sparked this like moment for me where, you know, you're reflecting on how much there is to like learn in food and know about food. Because I, of course, went directly to Akiko, who hosts an amazing show called Japan Eats, because I'm like, who knows more about raw fish than the Japanese? And who knows more about like the Japanese than Akiko, who covers it for our network and has covered it in print and press forever. And she's like, honestly,
yeah, she's great.
Like, this is not a big deal. The main sushi places have already been doing it. Fish is traditionally frozen at sea. She's like, amongst the sushi chefs that I'm in contact with, which is like all the big names, everyone you'd want to hear from, they were more upset when the health department said you had to wear gloves while preparing sushi. Mm. That was a bigger impact. And that was a big learning for me, and then I started really thinking about like how fish has to travel and where, if you have these like large trawlers like going way out to sea and they're out there for weeks at a time, of course the fish is frozen. And it was kind of a belated glimpse of the obvious and the production chain. So I think the most surprising thing for me was that people who I feel like are going to be most impacted were like, oh yeah, we already kind of do this, guys.
Totally.
Yeah, there was a follow-up article I saw on Grub Street, and it did quote some of the top sushi chefs saying that they're already doing it, which also, like, the whole thing kind of surprised me. I wasn't really familiar with, I guess, this process.
Well, also, you're thinking about what the point is, right? And the point of freezing it is to kill parasites, which, you know, parasites won't, you know, live in fish if you heat it, but they will live it if it's completely uncooked. And the freezing, interesting, like, it will, like, take care of the parasites, but it doesn't take care of any other potential contamination around bacteria or infection. So freezing it doesn't mean that it is like safe across the board. It means it's dealing with like one specific threat to the fish.
Yeah, I feel like this is very much like the raw milk cheese debacle in many ways, where I think for some people it is like it initially is very much like a gut response when you see it, because you feel like it will imperil some, you know, production and producers. And I think, you know, ultimately it might, in, you know, for some suppliers and sourcers who rely on selling fish fresh to these people. But in the other way, I think it is something that is like already very conventional for many big, you know, big producers and buyers of this fish. So like for the large majority of people, I don't think the status quo is going to change much. I think for some fringe, you know, restaurants and producers and groups that may affect them dramatically. But, you know, ultimately our response to that being like, oh, this is huge news, and it's not,
Yeah,
seems very on par with other big sweeping announcements that are made in the food space.
And I know we're going long here, but just one more quick point that Phil Gilmore made, who owns Momo Sushi and also hosts the main course here. You know, he's like, sometimes, yeah, it upsets me when they make these rules, but I'd rather everybody be safe and me have to do a little bit of extra work, even though his fish is coming in frozen anyway. Just a general thought for when things like this happen, you know.
Well, back to your friends over at the Open Table Business, the other thing that really jumped out at me is the way that the reporter talked about this rule change was to ease some of the regulation and record keeping for restaurants. But that doesn't really make any sense to me, because if you have to track and report on your freezing and refrigeration techniques for different fish from different purveyors, some was frozen at sea, some was frozen at the docks, some was frozen in your restaurant, and if you can do a flash like deep freeze or a longer, a lower temperature freeze, it seems like that's where the challenge for the business is going to be. It's like, how do I keep track of this information, and how am I reporting on it if something goes wrong?
Excellent. Okay.
we have some feelings. Yeah, I see that. On this one.
And just to give a shout out on Eater today, there's an article, Welcome to the Golden Age of Food Radio by Allison Gibson at Heritage Radio Network, is a large part of this story. So y'all check it out.
Check it out. And welcome to the Golden Age.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty nice here.
Okay, we're going to take one more break and come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience, which this week was for the Gelanese Shuffle. Here's the rundown. The restaurant, Momofuku Co. Location, 8 Extra Place in NoHo, NYC. The concept, for one night only, on Thursday, July 9th, 37 of the world's best chefs from 17 countries took part in one gigantic international kitchen swap for the Grand Gelanese Shuffle, organized by Gelanese, a collective culinary entity of worldwide known cutting-edge chefs. The chef, Massimo Bottura of Osteria Francescana in Modena, taking over for Momofuku Co.'s Sean Gray. Why did I go? Because this was a once-in-a-lifetime dinner. My experience. Tickets went on sale online a few months ago for this exclusive event. I was able to get a solo seat at Co. for 6 p.m. seating. At the booking, I did not know who the guest chef would be, as it was a secret until the actual meal. All of the chefs would be revealed the day of. So it was a delight to find out that Massimo was the chef. His restaurant was recently awarded the number 2 spot on the world's best restaurant list, 50 best restaurant list. Now, what did I get? Well, it was a tasting menu like no other. Highlights were corn off the cob in textures and temperatures, a surprise dish, shrimp and grits a la Wiley, honoring guest and chef friend Wiley Dufresne, plus spins on Massimo's signature dishes, like spaghetti wants to be the crunchy part of lasagna with bone marrow and bolognese, and oops, I broke the cannolo as an apple pie. I'm not making up these names. How could I? My take. Wow. The scene, foodies and food media, including Kate Crater, Dana Cowan, Peter Meehan, and Sierra Tischgart. Interesting tidbit. Chefs and diners were posting on social media from around the world using the hashtag Gelinese Shuffle. Slow by slow, it was revealed who was where in the world. This experiment showed trust and camaraderie among the chefs. Personal fun fact. I dined solo at Osteria Francescana in Modena about a month ago and met Massimo. He actually told me he was the visiting chef at Co, and I told him I was going. It was really cool that we figured that out. Now, he wasn't supposed to tell me, but I kept it a secret until the dinner, as I didn't want to spoil the fun. Now, when I saw him again, he noted I'm the only person to have these back-to-back dining experience with his cooking. So that's pretty awesome. Another personal fun fact. I met Mike Lee, a listener of my show, who was there for the second seating. Yeah. He recognized my voice as he passed by me and said hello. So it was great to meet you, Mike.
What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Okay, Dad, do not listen to this part. The cost, $250, not including tax and tip. Would I go back? Yes, I would do another shuffle. The website is gelinese.com. Whew. Ooh. So that was a once-in-a-lifetime one.
That sounds like actually kind of double once-in-a-lifetime, like the mm-hmm. back-to-back. What a cool story.
Yeah. Well, it was when I was in Modena and I met Massimo, and he heard I was from New York, and he was like, oh, I'm coming to New York. And he told me. I was like, that's a secret. You're not supposed to tell me. But I was like, I'm going. Because it was really rare that I was going, because there were three New York restaurants doing it. Actually, Blanca did it here at Roberta's. And also Mission Chinese. Or Mission Canteen. No, Mission Chinese. So it was great.
That's so awesome. Cool. And what a like cool thing to be a part of. I remember when they like sent that out that this was happening. I couldn't help but just like imagining all these like chefs in the real the life swap like Dave Chappelle did.
He had to stay in their apartment
where
too.
You're in their pajamas. And,
like, I like that idea.
That's funny.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it seems like this group of chefs are. They all love each other. I think they all got a lot out of it, going into each other's kitchens and the trust and the respect. And I think it was a fun thing. So.
I had to be like the line cook the week before when you're like down on your hands and knees with like a toothbrush, you know, washing the
Massimo
like,
is the coming.
Rubber. Yeah, you're like, Massimo is coming, we must prepare.
Yeah, so, well, that was that. Now it's time for the final question.
Da-da-da.
Next week, my guest is Adam Sachs, editor-in-chief of Saveur magazine. Really excited to be talking to Adam. I've known him a while, more when he was just a travel food writer. And so now he's big chief at Saveur. So what should I ask him?
First of all, I love Saveur. My question for Adam is, who is your reader? What do they look like? What do they do?
Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
That's my question.
I'm going to crib one from Ruth Reichel, who we also just did an Evolutionaries recording with. And she talked a lot about food photography. And she's like, how does food photography change in a day and age where everybody, you know, has an Instagram photo or a camera? When you're a magazine, like, what are you kind of bringing to the table that's like new and special and different enough? Or I think like the Times has done it a little bit, like, is there a certain kind of tongue-in-cheek celebration around posting a photo from someone's iPhone?
Cool.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about what young people today have kind of like on their plates and what they're thinking about, especially with Declan, our recent high school graduate. But I'm wondering for him what he thinks the 18 to 24 year old audience is going to look like in 10 years and how they will adapt to meet their needs as a print publication.
So just some chill questions.
Yeah.
I basically do no longer have to prep for this show. I have like a whole segment right there.
You can also ask him, like, I'm like curious, yeah, what do you eat for breakfast? Do you have a workout routine? Do you meditate?
What's in your refrigerator right now?
Okay, done. Thank you, guys. This has been really, really cool. And I'm honored to be a part of Heritage Radio. And I'm honored to know all of you, be a part of this team, and that you guys came on my show.
Right?
We're so happy to be here.
Damn good show.
Yeah.
Thank you. Really, I love you guys. And so here are the shout outs to Heritage Radio Networks, where you can find them. Erin Fairbanks, Executive Director. She's the host of The Farm Report, which is on Thursdays at 1 o'clock. Jack Inslee, Executive Producer and host of Full Service Radio, Thursdays at 7:30. He's also my engineer. And Allison Hamlin, Deputy Director. And I'm wondering if there's going to be a show in the future. I'm
like, stay tuned.
All right. I was thinking of that when I was putting this together.
She's going to be a guest on Gunwash next month, so we'll make sure to feature that.
Yeah, what is it, August 27th?
Yeah.
For a debate-themed episode. So that'll be
good to know.
The debate show.
Okay, social media, at Erin_Fairbanks, at Jack Inslee, at Allie Hamlin, that's with two L's, and at Heritage_Radio. I'm at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my website's BayerPublicRelations.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. They are archived there. They are also all on Stitcher and iTunes. And thank you guys just for being a part of this. This has been fun.
Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah, thank
we couldn't do it without you.
Can I make a shout out?
Yeah.
To Shari's parents who came and visited and listen every week, and anytime like the live stream is down or if it's 2 minutes late or something's not working, they let us know immediately. Incredibly supportive. They were great when we met them here. So out to Shari's parents.
Nice, oh, Jack. You just now, you made their day. You made their year.
Cheers to Shari's parents.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Mom and Dad, my number one fans. So I'm Sherry Bayer. You've been listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 o'clock with another live show. Hope you'll tune in then. Bye.
Thanks, Liz.
The theme song for All in the Industry is provided by the California Honey Drops. Other music featured today was by Rectech.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.